Welcome back to Current State. I'm Brooke Allen, in for Mark Bayshore. Dr. Rufus Isaacs is a bee researcher and professor of entomology at MSU. His work addresses the growing concern with bee population decline in our region and around the world. And Dr. Isaacs recently discussed the problem with MSU Today's Dr. Kirk Heinze. Isaacs describes some of the main difficulties bees face in our changing world.
What seem to be the major factors driving this is habitat loss. These bees need flowers to feed on during the summer. They also need a place to nest. And as we develop land more, there's fewer places for them to persist. Pesticides and diseases are two of the other factors. And so people are currently really actively exploring all of those and trying to understand what's driving wild bee decline. Across the Midwest, there's been a real change in the number of certain bumblebee species. Some are much, much reduced from where they used to be. But to be honest, we don't know for a lot of the many species of wild bees that we have in the state what their population trends are, because we haven't been monitoring them. So there's a real need to start, you know, a monitoring program that we can look at long-term trends in wild bee abundance.
Rufus, when people hear wild bees, or when we talk about nectar and pollination, a lot of folks will go straight to honeybees. But honeybees and wild native bees are different, aren't they?
Well, there is a distinction, because the honeybees that most people are familiar with are originally from Europe, and so they were brought here with the settlers in the 1600s. They were an essential part of life then. We didn't have electricity, so we needed candles, so we needed beeswax. We didn't have refined sugar. We needed sweeteners, so we had honey. You could make mead with honey. There are a lot of reasons why these settlers brought the honeybee to the U.S. So that is a very good pollinator and has been turned into a multi-million dollar business for pollinating crops across the country. And that's an essential part of our agriculture. But there are also these 450-something other species that we consider the wild species. They're not managed. They don't have beekeepers. They just persist in the landscape if we give them what they need.
Who are the better pollinators, the honeybees or the wild bees?
Well, it depends how you ask that question. So in terms of total value to Michigan agriculture and Michigan production of crops, the honeybee definitely wins that. We've looked in blueberry farms, for example, in the sites that we work at in western Michigan, and estimate they do about 80, almost 90% of the pollination work totally across the state. But in certain settings where you've got smaller fields with more wild habitat around them, maybe where it's a smaller grower that doesn't contract with a commercial beekeeper, there the honeybees are doing a smaller part of the pollination, and the wild bees really pick up the slack and are really good pollinators of crops like blueberry. So it really depends on where you are. I think efficiency on a per bee basis, bumblebees do well. Some of the wild bees do really well on some of our crops. But in terms of sheer numbers, the honeybee wins that race, because they've got the beekeepers and the colonies, thousands.
They've got the population.
Exactly. They've got the abundance. Yeah.
With the decline in these indigenous species, though, and you mentioned fruit growers, this has created a problem for those that need to get pollination done at certain times of the year. Understand they have to go to other states sometimes to get the honeybees in.
For a long time, we've brought honeybees into the state from other states. They often go down to Florida, Georgia during the winter months, because it's just too cold to be building numbers of your honeybees in the spring to be able to pollinate those early crops like cherries and blueberries and apples. Beekeepers will often take those out of the state for the parts of the winter and then bring those back really strong, ready to pollinate the crops early in the year. So that's not really such a new thing. But with all the talk of colony collapse disorder that was happening a while ago, there was a lot of concern about the long-term viability of pollination and whether we need to be relying more on wild bees. And that's where some of our research has sort of added to the story here.
Well, speaking of your research, Michigan State is lead in an $8.6 million grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. You call it the Crop Pollination Project. You've got a number of collaborators, including the Xerces Pollinator Group. Tell us a little bit about the Crop Pollination Project.
Yeah, so this was actually originally funded in 2012. It's from the USDA, as you mentioned, from their NIFA Specialty Crop Research Initiative, and this is a specific initiative to help vegetable, fruit, and nut growers with their issues. And as I said, one of the issues was sustainability of pollination. So we brought this group together back in the 5-6 years ago now, and we've got 15 institutions around the country, including, as you said, that group based out of Oregon. And we're trying to understand the contribution that wild bees provide to pollination of almonds, blueberries, apples, cherries, pumpkins, watermelon, raspberries around the country. So a lot of these fruit and vegetable and nut crops. Working with a great team, and we have been exploring that through a lot of on-farm work, so working at fruit farms in Michigan. A lot of data collection. We're at the sort of point of trying to figure out what all of that means. Yeah. But it's clear that as you look across agriculture, there are places where honeybees are really important. And then as we get to places that have more wild habitat, more suitable environment around the farm, then we get more of these wild bees. And part of the project is to look at if we deliberately go into these farms and plant habitat for pollinators, can we increase the wild bee abundance, maybe also help the honeybees and help the grower with getting better pollination? And just one study that we did in Michigan in my lab before this project started did demonstrate a little increase in blueberry yield if we set up these pollinator plantings in the farms. So we're supporting those bees with pollen, with nectar, with a place to nest, and that's boosting those wild bee numbers to help the honeybees when it's bloom time in the spring.
My guest is Dr. Rufus Isaacs. He's a bee researcher and a professor in the Department of Entomology at Michigan State University. You mentioned the habitat experiments that you're doing. Farmers are, when you say habitat with respect to bees, that probably, I mean, your research, correct me if I'm wrong, but would have implications for what some of the people listening to this interview can do in their own yards in an effort to support bees.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we are focused in that project on farms, and we have some bigger areas to play with, and growers can help us establish these plantings in some fairly big areas. But yeah, the individual homeowner, gardener, can certainly do a smaller version of this on their own farm, or I mean on their own garden. It's that build it and they will come, Field of Dreams right. kind of effect. So we've got some advice through MSU Extension that we put out on which plants are really good for pollinators. If you look for the Smart Gardening Program. Yeah, the Smart Gardening Program has, with that group, we've put together a series of guidelines for how you can better manage your garden for pollinators. Now, not everybody gets excited about the idea of bees coming into their garden, but a lot of these wild bees are very very docile and wouldn't, you know, they're not out to get you. They're busy getting pollen, getting nectar from the flowers. We also have a pocket guide that we just put together that's for sale through MSU Extension through the MSU bookstore, and that's a little flip guide so people can get more familiar with wild bees. But there's a lot of good guides out there now, and if you can set a little part of your garden aside with some flowering plants that bloom, especially that bloom through the season, that give you blooms from the spring through to the fall with a mix of species, and those resources give you some advice on that, then the bees have a place to feed through the whole summer.
Yeah, I've got the little handbook here. It's called Bees of the Great Lakes Region and Wildflowers to Support Them, a guide for farmers, gardeners, and landscapers, as you mentioned, Rufus, available through MSU Extension. But a lovely little hand guide and something that I'm going
to
read.
I think part of our overall message to the gardeners is that you should use good integrated pest management in your gardening.
Right.
You should only use chemical controls when you absolutely need to, and you should think about the non-intended side effects of using pesticides, especially on flowers that are blooming, that the bees will be visiting directly. So part of that smart gardening program is only using pesticides and only using bee safe. There are a few bee safe pesticides that will only target the pest insect you're after. And just try and be mindful when you're gardening.
Just be judicious when you're using those pesticides in your gardens.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I've been talking with Dr. Rufus Isaacs, internationally renowned bee researcher from Michigan State University, about what you can do out there to help mitigate the problem of bee decline. Rufus, we'll have you back. This project is ongoing, and it'll be interesting to see what some of those other findings turn out to be.
All right. Thanks very much for the invitation.
Thank you.